Hi, today is January the 16th, 2016. This is Wes Fryer, and I am in Manhattan, Kansas, talking with my mother, Angie Fryer, and going to ask her some questions, and she's going to talk a little bit about how she taught school and became a teacher and some of her experiences teaching. So, how did you become a teacher? What pathway did you follow? And what got you interested in being a teacher?
I started babysitting and teaching Vacation Bible School and loved kids. And at the time, there weren't many options open for women. You could be a teacher, a secretary, or a nurse. And I certainly wasn't going to be a secretary because I couldn't type. And I didn't want to be a nurse because I couldn't handle some of the things nurses had to do in those days. Mm. But I always loved kids. And so I always knew I wanted to be a teacher. And when I went to college at Trinity University in San Antonio. I did my major was elementary ed. I did my student teaching in first grade, second semester, in Phoenix District Number 1.
Now, before we go to there, Arizona, did you know at the beginning of college you were going to be a teacher, or did
before
you decide?
We go to Arizona.
Didn't you just say Phoenix? I thought you said Phoenix.
I didn't mean to say that. No, I taught in Phoenix. Let's back up.
Oh, okay. Well, I wanted to ask you.
I taught in Phoenix District later. No, I taught in San Antonio District 1.
Okay.
My student teaching.
Okay.
Sorry about that.
But what I wondered is, did you start as a freshman in college knowing you wanted to be a teacher?
Yes, I did. I always knew that.
Had anybody in your family been teachers
No.
or steered you in that direction?
No, they had not.
Okay.
I just knew I wanted to.
So you did student teaching as part of Trinity?
Yes, in first grade, second semester, and this is before there was public school kindergarten anywhere in Texas. There was no. So first grade, the kids had learned to line up, to sit in their seats, all that first semester. So I got them when they were perfectly behaved school children, second semester. So the next year I went, my first teaching job was in Mesquite, Texas. So I moved to Dallas, Texas, which is just, Mesquite's just a bedroom community
was
then of Dallas. <Right. clears throat> And my roommate and I were going, and at the last minute, she needed to stay in San Antonio for family reasons. So I went by myself. I didn't know a soul. And my school was brand new, Hamby Elementary School, Mesquite. And we had like erasers and no chalk. We had trash cans. We were missing a lot of things.
You had a lot of students, too.
Well, and there were four sections of first grade and 40 kids in each section. We were in a pod that had the four classrooms, did not have walls all the way to the ceiling between them in a square. And in the middle of that were the restrooms. And then we had a walkway to the rest of the building and the other pods. It was a very forward-thinking model, school model at the time. And it was in a playground. I mean, we didn't have grass yet. It was brand, brand new, just barely open for school to start. And I didn't know what I was doing, obviously, because the kids had had no kindergarten, and they didn't know how to line up or hold their hands up or anything. So that was a challenge. The other three teachers I was teaching with, two were longtime first grade teachers, and one had been teaching maybe 2 or 3 years. They were so helpful. We always did lesson plans together. If I had a problem, I just peeked over the lockers, over the wall, and someone would help. We had no aides, no assistants. I taught PE, music, art. There were no bathroom breaks unless you could get your next-door teacher to come. Oh, did bus duty, cafeteria duty. And that's just the way it was.
So why did you have so many kids?
Because that's the way it was.
Well, it was because of the baby room, right?
No.
Why were there 40 kids? I mean, is that what you had?
This is a booming town.
It was because
it was
of the
a growing town. It was
town.
Booming. Okay. Yes, the town was.
Okay.
And that was a wonderful year and a tough year. It's interesting that some of those kids I still remember just like that. And my goodness, they're grandparents now. Look at them. So, the second year, same thing, and it was wonderful. It was so much better the second year.
And if you remember any of those names or things, I think that's fine to say. I mean, who knows who will find this and if it would be transcribed. Yeah. What do you remember? For the kids you do remember, why do you think you remember them? Like, what do you remember about them or about what happened? their situations, like where they kind of came from?
Yeah, I'd rather not talk about some of that. This was a very poor area. Most of it was quite poor.
Tough situation.
Oh, and I did home visits. Every semester, every teacher had to do a home visit to every child, if at all possible. And I did. And at the time, it was a very blue-collar school, the area. Most of the moms were at home. They were at-home moms then. And so it was tough to do that. You got days off to do that, but still, it was way wonderful, and I think teachers should still have to do that.
What was that like, getting to visit them at their house?
But you learn about, why is their child like this? Why does this child do this? Why does this child look like this? Why is this child's socks never been washed? Mm-hmm. You know, all kinds of of things. And that was a lovely experience, you know, and all the parents cared the most about their kids and wanted the best for their kids. I didn't encounter any bad or dangerous or, you know, maybe unhealthy, but not any scary. It was it made me a better teacher for every child.
Did you feel well prepared by Trinity for what you ended up, the reality of teaching?
Oh, no, no.
Really?
No, not at all. I was taught how to teach by the three teachers in my pod.
Mm-hmm.
And that was, and my school, I had a wonderful principal. That whole thing was wonderful.
How many years were you there?
2 years. After that, I came back to Abilene, my hometown. And
before we go there, though, do you want to talk about what happened significant on the playground when you were there?
Oh, yes, I better do that. The second year I was teaching first grade, and as I said, we had playground duty both for recess and PE. And I was on the playground with another teacher, and I had the four classes. And she had a transistor radio. It was when Kennedy was in town, in Dallas, and listening to the parade. And she heard Kennedy get killed, and she came to tell me, and then we listened on her transistor radio, and then that's my memories about that. Then, of course, school was canceled, I guess the next day. I don't know if school was canceled or was it a weekend. I don't remember. We didn't have school. And
were you scared?
Not when Kennedy was shot. Terrified after Ruby shot Oswald, because at the time, living in Dallas, it was like, what's happened to this town? It was like, this town has gone crazy. And everything was shut down. You know, the grocery stores, everything. And
really?
People didn't know if, is this personal? Is this, what is it? And so, of course, we watched on TV and listened on the radio. It was a scary time. It was awful that Kennedy was shot, but it was scarier to think that maybe Dallas was going nuts or something. Because who are these people? Who ever heard of Jack Ruby? Who ever heard of Oswald? They're here in Dallas. They're right down the road.
Ruby, though, was a former Dallas police person, but no one ever heard of him.
As a 22-year-old school teacher, I didn't have any idea
who he
was.
People were being shot and things.
Yeah. Was
that part of why you chose to leave and go back home?
No. No.
Why did you decide to go back
to Abilene? I wanted to go back and teach in Abilene.
What was your home?
It was my home.
Because when did you all move to Abilene growing up? You were pretty young.
When I was going into second grade.
And before that, you were at Oak Ridge? So you moved from Oak Ridge to Abilene?
Not exactly, but sort of. Because you're from Louisiana in between.
Your family hunted for a place that would be better for allergies?
We moved to Abilene because we were living in Shreveport. And I had asthma so badly, they needed a place that was drier.
Right.
And they traveled all the way to California.
Mm-hmm.
No job by day. They didn't have a job. Then they found Abilene, Texas, and they just thought this is a great place. And they bought a house, and then he found a job, and we moved there.
So what was that like going back to Abilene then after having taught in Mesquite? Was the
teaching
similar
or different? My supervisor was my second grade teacher. I loved, Mrs. Phillips.
Your supervisor, meaning like your principal?
No, my supervisor, the elementary supervisor for the district.
Oh, okay.
I don't know what it's called today.
An assistant superintendent for elementary. Somebody who's over all the elementaries?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, over the teachers. She was a curriculum person, probably.
And she had been your second grade teacher?
And she was my second grade teacher.
So you were your first teacher when you moved
and
to Abilene.
When I was in the fifth and sixth grade, I fell in love with my principal, Scott Hayes.
Mm.
He was my principal when I went back to teach in Abilene. And it was just
he was
wonderful.
Your principal?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, wow.
He's my principal as a student when I was in elementary school, and he was my principal as a teacher.
Mm.
And it was just wonderful. I mean, I taught not far from where my parents lived. I taught in this wonderful school district where so much parental support. Anything we wanted to do.
Did you have 40 kids again?
No. I don't know how many I had. Probably 30. And all the support in the world. And I knew what I was doing by then. And I also had, there were three sections of each grade there in that school.
What was the school?
Stephen F. Austin. And that was wonderful teachers to support me. And that was great. So I did that for 1 year. And the next year, the population changed a little bit. And they needed another second grade teacher. And so I moved up to second grade. Stayed in the same classroom, but I moved up to second grade.
Did you have more supplies in Abilene? You said in Mesquite you didn't have chalk. And
well, that was just at the beginning of the year before the orders came in.
Okay.
We had plenty. It was before the orders, you know. And then second grade, it was delightful. I had some of the same kids, a couple, three, four, maybe
you
the same kids.
Looped up with them?
I had them. They had them first grade and second. And then, but truthfully, second grade's a little boring. There's not much new to learn in second grade then. I mean, I don't know. It had units and that kind of thing. But then the next year I moved up to third grade.
Oh.
And I really liked third grade. There was a lot more content there. But I had a lot of the kids placed in my class there who had what was then called language learning difficulties and later called learning disabilities. I mean, the title of what it is has changed so many times over the years. And a lot of those kids were in my class because I just enjoyed working with them, and I guess I was pretty good at it. And some of those kids were ones that moved up with me. And I really loved that. They were like puzzles and really intelligent kids who you find one little detail and like teach them to type, and then all of a sudden they could write and spell and mm-hmm. things like that. So then I started, maybe we had the only language learning research teacher in the district was in my school, Lena Gans. And she was across the way from me, and she taught me a lot, and she convinced me, she kept on trying to convince me to go into special ed and to go into learning disabilities or language and learning disabilities or whatever. And so I started taking classes in the summer. I took some at University of Texas or some extension classes all along in that. And then I went to, I spent the summer after that third grade year. Maybe I taught third grade 2 years. I don't remember. No, maybe one. And then I went to TWU, Texas Women's University, in the summer and finished certification in learning disabilities. And that was, at the time, your certification called, it had to be for brain injured children. It was a special ed, and it included all brain injuries because there was no real diagnosis, but for a child to be in the program.
The special ed was very different then.
It was very different, yes. And it was all mainstreamed. All kids were mainstreamed. If possible.
Unless it was severe.
In our in our building, we had a classroom of children who were blind. And they were mainstream for some things. But they basically had their... But they were in the school. They were part of the school and not separate. But anyway, I finished my certification that summer. That was a great summer. Classes with a pediatric neurologist and...
And you lived in Denton.
I lived in a motel. I lived at the Ramada Inn in Denton. They had special rates for students. Like me. And that was a very, shall I say, stimulating summer. It was great.
How long?
So then I came back.
2 months, the whole summer?
Oh, and it was paid for by the parents, paid for my certification.
Like a PTO or something?
No, Association for Learning Disabled. I don't remember the initials.
So it's like you had a scholarship.
Yes, full. And then for my, food and
with
everything.
With the understanding you'd come back to the district
right.
and
use
it.
To that school.
Right.
To that school. And so then I taught there in that classroom a couple of years. And it was wonderful. It was absolutely like...
That was a special education classroom or what was that called?
It was a resource room.
Resource room.
Mm-hmm. And I had, I did lots of...
Pull out?
Oh, that's what it was. I had the kids for 1 to 3 hours a day. And made... so much progress because these were kids who some of them were gifted. I think they probably all were at least normal, at least average intelligence. And this was a pretty high socioeconomic level school, and these kids were all neighborhood school. Nobody was bused in or brought in, but we were becoming aware of this, and we had the only classroom in the district. I mean, Lee Nail did, and she had fourth, fifth, and sixth. I had first, second, and third. Learning disabled kids.
What kinds of things would you do, or how did you find the key that unlocked a different child?
Testing. They'd all been tested, and then we did some more testing. Lee Nail and I did some more testing to see, you know, just whether are they auditory learners, are they visual learners?
Is that the WISC and kinesthetic? That kind of stuff when you started to do these standard instruments that you would...
Not then. Somebody else did. The school psychologist did that then. I did that later. Mm. But then, and then we taught from that because you could tell so much, and I learned to interpret that a lot then.
So you learned about what their strengths were, how they wanted to, how they learned best, and then you try to do that with them as well as tell
their
teacher.
One thing I remember really clearly, there was this little boy named Eric. Oh, he was so cute. He loved the Dallas Cowboys. He knew everything about the Dallas Cowboys. I don't remember his last name. But reading was just an impossibility for him. He knew everything. He was just great in math, but he just couldn't read. And so I would put my finger on the words and so he could follow, you know, as we're reading. And he just couldn't. And I learned to not to wear fingernail polish because that was a total distraction to him. And when I quit wearing fingernail polish, we could do that and he could read.
Wow.
I started learning then the tiny little things that make a difference.
And sometimes you wouldn't have a way of knowing that until you just tried different things to find out.
That's what it all was.
What worked for that kid.
That's what it all was then. Huh. We had no curriculum then. It was all experimental. It was like, we can figure this kid out if at all possible. Mm-hmm. And it was very rewarding. Mm. One of my students his name was Robert, and he ended up going to North Texas and majoring in music performance and composition.
Wow.
Yeah, that's a great story.
Mm.
Okay, so then the next summer,
how many years was that then? You said, you taught a couple years in Mesquite, you taught first grade, then second grade some, and then...
And third grade and one year, and special 2 years.
Yeah, so it was about 5 or 6 years, and then you went into the resource room for a few years.
I was in Abilene. I was first grade, second grade, third grade, resource.
Okay.
Then the handsome cowboy from Wyoming rode in on his airplane.
And had a stick in his foot in the lake.
in May, the year of Hemisphere, 1968, in Hemisphere. And he came in to visit a friend, and so I met him in May, and we got engaged the 4th of July, and married the 9th of August, and moved to Phoenix.
Were your parents a little alarmed that it moved that fast?
No, they were thrilled. They met him, and they were thrilled. They knew him.
Did you know? Right away?
Well, obviously.
Well, I mean, in a short time. But...
That's pretty obvious. Yeah. So we lived in Phoenix, and I thought, oh, this is wonderful. He was already living in Phoenix and stationed at Williams Air Force Base. He was an instructor pilot. And so I was thrilled because then I could go to Arizona State and finish my master's because I had my certification. But I just
from
TWU. Yeah. And I had a lot of classes from University of Texas and other places that had offered extension classes, you know, and what I was studying. But
you got to actually put it into a degree program.
And that's what I thought I could do. And I got to ASU and they didn't have anything in my field.
Because it was so new?
Uh-huh.
Wow.
And my mentor, Lee Nail Gann, was a pioneer, really.
What was her name again?
Lee Nail Gann, G-A-N-N.
And was she at TWU is where you got to know her?
No, she was at Stephen F. Austin.
Huh. Okay.
Just my real mentor, not just a summer mentor or something.
Right.
And then they said, in fact, then, if you only had your master's already, we would hire you to teach because we desperately need...
Because you want that.
We desperately need to have that in our education program at Arizona State.
Wow.
But then I really, getting a job was awful because I ended up working at a private school called... I don't remember. New Way School. It was a very small school started by parents of children with this problem. And so
what
I...
What do you say this problem?
A learning disability. A learning disability.
Right.
And when I speak of learning disabilities, at the time it was just considered for kids of at least average intelligence who couldn't read, write, or spell, or do math. That's sort of the definition. And they had to have an EKG... An EEG to qualify for the program.
What did that show?
To prove nothing. It had to show that there was no brain damage.
Oh, so it was more of eliminating things rather than showing what the problem was.
They still had the learning problems. But there was a clean electroencephalogram.
And that would show brain damage if you had it?
Yes.
Huh, okay.
And they would have been in another program. They would have had something else.
Right.
You know, cerebral palsy. I don't know, something else.
Really interesting. So that was a scientific way of filtering.
It was the law.
And making sure that kids were in your program.
And it was the law.
Interesting. Wow.
For funding reasons, probably.
Okay.
So I taught at New Way School, and that was a tutoring program. And I was appalled because they charged $10 an hour for students to, and this is in 1968 now, in the fall of 68, to have tutoring. And the parents would take them out of school and bring them to this place, which was part of a church. And I don't know how many of us there were, maybe three of us that were tutors. And I'm such a public school person that I just didn't like that at all. It was pretty bad. So then in January, I started at Arizona State, and I went ahead and got my master's in special ed, and it was, they counted everything I had, but then I went ahead and added gifted and reading, and I became, and that's when I took all my testing classes, and I was not qualified to be a school psychologist. But a school psychometrist, so I could do a lot of prescriptive testing with the WISC and all that. I could do all that kind
of. So special education then wasn't inclusive of learning disabilities. Was it more children with brain damage, like severe and profound?
That was there too, but learning disabilities wasn't called special ed. And then it became special ed.
Then special education became inclusive of all that later.
Yes.
Starting at that time.
But that's why I had to have a certificate for physically handicapped with a certificate. I had to take all the classes for teaching, cerebral palsy and all that, because of the brain relationship to the license, to the approval of the certificate, not licensing, certification. Teachers weren't licensed then, they were certified. And so, I mean, it was changing every year. You know, so it's when I'm not remembering this. I haven't thought about this in so long.
Did you find that program beneficial in the same way that the TWU was, as far as invigorating?
It was different because part of my major was for emotionally disturbed, and I just loved that. That was so I got a lot broader,
you for me, right?
Broader education because of that. You know, especially by my emphasis in my master's at Arizona State was emotionally disturbed and gifted. Even though I covered all the other stuff.
Did you finish that before I was born, as far as the program, get the master's?
Almost.
Okay.
Almost.
Okay.
And that, I loved my, I won't say that, my professor of most of my classes for the emotionally disturbed child. He was just wonderful. I love that. And I was pregnant that last semester. You were born the end of August, and one of the requirements... Well, one requirement was you had to spend the weekend in a remote facility for juvenile criminals.
Oh, wow.
It was called Fort Grant, and it was out in the desert somewhere in Arizona. And we had to spend the weekend, maybe one night and 2 days, out there, bused way out there.
And did you work with kids when you were there?
And we interviewed them. We observed them, and we interviewed them.
Testing them or just meeting them, kind of?
No, just... This is an observation. Just
getting acquainted.
How many people have ever spent the night in essentially a penitentiary for adolescents?
What was the reason they had you do that, you think?
To know what it's like. To see what these... I mean, this is...
Where these kids can end up and...
Yeah, and what are they like? What are they doing? What's the situation? That place has since been closed. It was bad. It was really bad. But it was very eye-opening. Another thing I had to do, and you went along with me, because you weren't born yet, was at a midnight police ride in Phoenix. And that was another thing that we had to do for that class.
And that was part of your graduate program.
Yes. And they wouldn't let me go without your father because I was so far pregnant. But to go and walk up to the door with the policeman with whatever that was going on.
What kind of class was doing this or was requiring this?
It was one of my classes for teaching the emotionally disturbed child.
Emotionally disturbed.
Yes. see what is his home like. Look at the violence in the homes. Look at the domestic things going on. And we had to. We couldn't do a daytime ride. It had to be a night.
And then thinking about the ways in which emotional disturbance plays into society.
Like, do we even know kids who come from this kind of a, mm-hmm. you know? And Phoenix was pretty rough in the downtown, and especially after midnight, you know. So mm-hmm. very interesting. I mean, when I say the memorable things in my, you know, during that time. And then after that, when I finished my, it was when I was going to school. It was during the time that I was working in Phoenix District Number 1. And there are many school districts around there, of course. And I worked with, there was one other woman who was teaching learning disabilities, and her name was Dorothy Tuck, T-U-C-H. So we were Friar Tuck. Mm-hmm. We were the team. And some things we were together, and some things we were apart. But I had three schools then. After I got my master's, I had three schools that belonged to me, that I was a resource teacher. I had my own classroom in each of those three schools. I don't remember the name of the schools. I just was there 1 year, I think, probably. One school was right outside a big brick housing project.
This is still Phoenix, correct?
Mm-hmm. With a tall fence and... My classroom was like a portable outside, and the teacher who'd had my job before was a resource teacher, was murdered in her classroom by one of the mothers from the project. So they told
me, in your room?
In my room. Shot. So they told me to keep my door locked.
Nice.
And kids would come to me 1 to 3 at a time for an hour a day. And that was, those kids were all black kids.
Did Dad know about all that and how dangerous it was?
Oh, I was fine.
I know you turned out to be fine, but did you think Dad was aware of all of that?
Sure. And another school that...
Was that when I was alive then? I mean, after I was born, you were doing that?
No, that was before.
Before.
I guess that was before. This is a little confusing.
That's okay. I mean, things, different things.
I haven't thought about this in years. But and one of my schools was mostly Hispanic, and it was very, very family-oriented, and... Same thing. I had, you know, kids would come to me.
Did you know about, or not know about, do you remember ever being afraid or being fearful in those situations or being scared?
I remember feeling very uncomfortable. One time, one day, I needed to do some testing of a child in a school I had never been to, and it was an all-black school. Every child, every teacher, every single person in that school is black. My hair had just been frosted, was very blonde, and I remembered exactly what I wore, a very light, tannish kind of suit, and I can remember walking down the hall. Everybody was nice as could be. It was a wonderful situation, but I felt like I glowed. I really felt out of place. I've never felt that way before or since, but I really felt it that way then. But it was, I mean, no, I wasn't afraid. I wasn't.
No,
I don't think I was ever afraid, except I was when they first told me that the former resource teacher had been shot.
Right.
But
so then what happened around the time I was born? You said you almost finished your degree.
And then I had an incomplete. I had to write a paper, and that's all I lacked was
for
that
your,
paper.
For your degree?
Yes. I took an incomplete for that. It was a
for that class.
Summer. Uh-huh. And then you were born the end of August, so... and I did not want to finish it. I just wanted to stay home with my baby. Mm. And your dad made me. He would stay home with you and send me to the library.
Mm-hmm.
And so I did. So we both got our master's at the same time, which would have been...
You know, good for Dad. I didn't know he had done that. I'm glad
he did.
I pushed you to get that done.
And so then in, I guess it was January of 71, then we moved to Colorado Springs.
So you both finished your degrees before moving to
we had to.
In December?
We had to move then.
No, I know, but I'm saying that...
Because he was going to teach at the Air Force Academy, he had to finish that.
Well, he had to finish because of that, and he got you to finish. So you both completed, and then you moved to Colorado.
Yes. Uh-huh. Right.
Okay.
And then we moved to Colorado Springs, and my next teaching was when you were maybe 2.5 or 3. And two of our friends, really close friends, had little boys, same age as you. And one of them had been a PE teacher, and the other one was Pam, and she was a cook. I mean, she just loved cooking, cookies, everything like that. So we decided to have a co-op school for the three kids. And every week, every Wednesday, one of us had you all. I think one of them...
Were there three kids?
Brucey had two kids that were right the same age, so we had four kids. And the PE teacher would take you ice skating and hiking, and you'd do all kind of, you know, things like that.
Homeschool co-op?
Uh-huh. And Pam would make cookies with you and do all kinds of things.
Read?
And I did all kinds of the things that I had done remedially with kids, with you, with perception, visual perception and auditory perception. You thought it was games, mm-hmm. you know, but I did all that kind of thing. So it was a fun time and did that for a while. Then, let's see, then in...
We have about 15 minutes. This will let us do 45 minutes at a time, so we have about 15 more minutes. We can do another one that picks up after this one's over. So.
And that was the extent of my teaching in Cara Springs. And then we moved to...
Because there was no preschool.
Alabama.
And it was...
You went to preschool, yes. You went to preschool.
I went to a Montessori.
No. No, you went to preschool. You went first 2 days a week, and then you're a little older, you went three mornings a week.
A church or what?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, just nice, good...
Like a half day?
Preschool, uh-huh. And then we moved to Alabama, and that's when you were four, I guess.
That's when I was scared about Santa coming.
It was... It was already passed. That was in Colorado Springs.
Oh, it was.
And when we moved to Montgomery, Alabama for 1 year, and that's when you... That's when you were in Montessori school, because we had lived in a condo then, and you had to wear a uniform. You were four, I guess. I guess you're four. Yeah, it had to be. Yes. And I taught art there as a volunteer.
At the same school where I went?
At the same school, but as a volunteer, but I taught art.
Huh.
That was the beginning of my volunteering in your school, which I did every year, as long as you were in,
right.
Until you graduated. And that was fun. And then we were just there 1 year, and then we moved to Lubbock, Texas. No, actually, we moved to Abilene for a while.
Was that when Dad was in transition?
Till we bought, and then till we bought a house, and you started kindergarten at Crockett Elementary in Abilene, which is where
right.
Uncle Ron went to school, but I didn't.
I started which grade?
Kindergarten.
Really?
We lived with my parents for maybe 2 months or something.
Now, was it just you and me, or Dad was there too?
No.
Was Dad in Lubbock?
He was already in Lubbock.
So you all were living apart, and
I guess
but
for a
you
month
hadn't
or
found
two.
A house.
Just for a month or two. We were house hunting
transition.
And all that.
Because, that's a part I always remember hearing something about. Like, I went to school in Abilene or whatever, but I never put it together because I knew we never lived. I mean, we permanently lived there. So it was just a couple months.
Yes.
Did we live with Grandma and Granddaddy?
Yes. Maybe 1 month, even.
Is that when they had the bottled Cokes that we would have?
I didn't drink Cokes. Maybe you did. I don't know.
I remember some few things about their house.
And then we moved to Lubbock. And Lubbock is where you started kindergarten, and that was in 1776 because it was the bicentennial.
Mm-hmm.
That was a big deal for all the
schools.
But
I was a late starter in kindergarten then because I had already started in Abilene, but then
No, you didn't restart. I mean, you just transferred schools.
Well, I know, but I'm saying I didn't begin the year in
Lubbock.
You
didn't begin the year.
Right.
But you were the youngest in your class.
Huh.
And because you have such a late birthday.
Year?
Yes.
I can still sing the 50
yes.
50
so
United
can
States.
I.
And that was in kindergarten.
Yes.
Huh.
76.
That's when I didn't want to do meatloaf, too, right?
No, I don't know. I never did want to do meatloaf.
Were you, and so that was at Murphy?
Mm-hmm. You went to May Murphy School.
Mm-hmm.
And it was an open concept school.
Mm-hmm.
And I volunteered in the school there. And I also taught at the Scottish Rite Learning Center mm-hmm. there.
Is that the first time you were affiliated with Scottish Rite?
Mm-hmm, the only time, yes. It was a Scottish Rite building, a big, beautiful building, and the Scottish Rite there in downtown, sort of Lubbock, had started this tutoring program because there wasn't this program much in the public schools. And so her name was Waters, Lena Waters, Dr. Lena Waters, was the person that they took from her teaching at Tech to become, to start that program. And it was a very specific curriculum that you had to teach by that was, I wish I could show that was so-called proven to work. And parents would take their kids out of the public school and bring them to us for 30 minutes to an hour a day or a week or whatever their schedule was.
Up to parents to do
that. Up to parents to do it. It was free. The Scottish Rite paid for it. They paid our salaries.
But parents had to provide the transportation. And the school cooperated.
Yes. But that was all the way up through high school. Mostly we had older kids there who had had so many problems and had been failures at school for a long time that this was sort of a last resort,
So it's kind of an alternative education thing, too.
Except to give them assistance. Except we just taught reading, writing, language, and spelling. That's what we focused on there.
Did the school still not have that kind of resource pull out at that time? Were you filling a need that wasn't being met?
Because we were a last resort, So did that for... I was doing that when Trudy was born in 1977, I kept doing that a while.
Is that when the WISC came about, or you started doing those kinds of
testing? No, I started that in graduate school in Arizona.
Did Scottish Rite have you do those kinds of assessments, or was it more working with kids with the curriculum that they had? Because later you became more of a... I did that a lot in Phoenix.
I did a lot of testing in Phoenix. Mm-hmm. And then... I did testing. Well, after we moved, I did some... I did it on my own, or as a favor to the public schools. Sometimes the list was too long.
It's still so expensive. Shelley's talked about how expensive it can be for certain things.
And the list was so long that that was part of my volunteer that I did at May Murphy. Mm-hmm. And when the principals knew me, that was part of what I could do to help.
Right.
And I was certified and all that, so that was it counted it in their records. And I really considered myself more of a one who did the testing prescriptively. I just didn't give the scores to the school. I worked with the, we didn't call them IEPs then, but that's what I did.
Were you a diagnostician?
Yes.
So educational diagnostician?
Yes. Well, except that term wasn't there then.
Right, but that's what you were doing.
Yes, I was.
Okay.
I called it prescriptive testing, but we didn't have IEPs then, but that's what I did with parents and the teachers and the principal.
Once you identified what kids needed and accommodations and things, you'd inform them and they'd try to...
Well, and conference-wise.
Right.
And work with.
Right.
And then we moved, we moved in 79.
Or maybe a little before that. 79 was when the hostage crisis all happened. I think we'd been there a little while before all that went down, weren't we? I went to kindergarten
through third. Well, when you were going into fourth grade...
Yes.
We moved to Columbus, Mississippi.
Right.
And there, first of all, you were in a public school that was horrendous. I first knew you didn't complain much, but you always brought your... You never were hungry after school. You had to ride the bus to school. You were never hungry. Well, why not? Because you ate your lunch on the bus. Why didn't you eat your lunch at noon? Because I played. No one had you sit down. No, we didn't have to eat. Anyway, and they spanked kids with paddles. I don't think you ever got a paddling you never told us about, but it was a pathetic educational situation. You learned nothing. You were so far ahead of what they taught, and it was horrible. So then we moved you to a Catholic school, and that
I remember
wasn't
all this.
Good a bit. And
St. Mary's was the name of that. I remember some of the nuns, and I remember...
And they whomped people on their knuckles with rulers.
When I talked one time in religion class and got stared at our results.
And you were there a very short time.
Yeah, it was one semester.
And then we... and the public school was just maybe a week. It wasn't really... And then that's where you didn't eat your lunch, going to St. Mary's. And so we moved you at mid-semester to... It was very hard to find a place there because people then registered their kids for private school before they're born, and it was mostly white flight kinds of things, and that's where the good schools were private schools. But we found this wonderful school called Warden Cardin, WardenCardin, and a woman had started this school using the Cardin method, and it was a private school, but it was not based on white flight. It wasn't that expensive. It was really a tough school. It was preschool through six. They started French at preschool. Every child had French every year. During lunch, they played classical music, and
they had great hamburgers for lunch.
It was good food. It was a hard school. You had to really, for instance, your spell. It was a
you memorized
integrated classroom, and for your whole fifth grade year, you studied Washington, D.C. Mm-hmm. All your math was Washington, D.C. All your spelling, all your everything had to do with Washington, D.C. And the spelling was, on Monday you got three words and you had to learn how to spell them and the diacritical markings, the definition, and to use them in a sentence by Tuesday, because Tuesday you got three more words. And so by Friday, the teacher would say, take your spelling test. And every student would take out a piece of paper, write down the word, write down it again next to it with diacritical markings, write the definition, and write a sentence with it. And you could do it. There was lots of homework. You studied hard, and you loved it.
And we got to go to Washington, D.C. somewhere in there.
And I think most of the kids loved it. Not all.
There were not many boys. I think I only had five boys. And I remember David and a few others. But there was more girls than boys.
And my job then was, we had a little motor home. And I parked it in the parking lot and plugged in. And I did testing there. Mm-hmm. And I did it for all levels and all the teachers.
Mm-hmm. And as a volunteer or as a paid person?
You got reduced tuition.
Oh, okay.
And Trudy was in preschool there.
Oh, I didn't know she was in preschool there.
So, and that was a wonderful academic situation, and you absolutely ate it up. You loved it. People said, how could he do that? How could he stand that? And you loved the homework. You loved, because you had, there in fifth grade, you had to research things and no internet.
It was very challenging.
Yeah. And you would rather
do that. And
it
was integrated.
That?
You know, it was, yes. You learned about, we studied the czars, too, at one
that
level.
Might have been in fourth grade.
It was all the Russians, and we learned about Romanovs and...
Well, I know we took a trip to Washington, D.C. that spring, and our tour guide would say something, and you would add on to that. Wes, how did you know that? Well, I learned it in spelling, or I learned that in math, or whatever. It convinced me how effective integrated learning is. Mm-hmm. You know, it was wonderful.
Right. So, but that, it was the diagnostician stuff in Murphy, or the RV, was pretty much, that was what you...
That's what I did there.
Okay.
We went there.
And then we moved to Kansas. We got about 4 minutes left. But when, like I said, we could do another one or we could wrap this one up. And when you moved to Kansas, you
I was a volunteer.
And
always, every school both of you were in, I volunteered once a week.
When did you get involved in school team training? Because that happened when I was in high
school. That's when you were in high school.
Uh-huh. Yeah, that was a movement.
That was a state run, Department of Transportation run, to prevent teenage alcohol abuse. Mm-hmm. That was the point. It was called Kansas School Team Training. And right. So, but I either...
Preventing self-destructive behaviors, which led to me reading Stephen Glenn and some really good ideas.
That was the beginning of my parent ed teaching, which I had been to a lot of training through because of that, and developing capable people and a lot of different parent ed classes. And so my teaching then... went to parents, and I taught a lot at the Presbyterian Church. I taught with some of the public school, E. Jorns, the public school social worker. I was her partner in a number of things. And we had groups, and I did parent ed for the church and for the school. And
then ended up moving kind of into Military Wives and other...
No, that was part of it. I did that through Military Wives when I was running the military... Mr. Program, the Military Wives Program.
Right.
Then we offered classes to them.
Right.
And then I taught some through Army Community Services, the Fort Riley ones, to teach parenting classes.
So here's my last question for you, because we'll have to wrap up. As you look back on your teaching career, what kind of advice would you have for people who are teaching that would be probably true today like it was before? What's something that you learned or advice that you would have about being a teacher and working with children?
Find a place that you don't have to go to meetings all the time and you don't have to sit on committees all the time. I mean, that was a wonderful thing about all my teaching always when I was actively teaching. We focused on kids and on learning from each other and learning from our in-service. And we did not focus on committees and all the other things. Also, today teachers are so uptight about, I need my planning period. I need this. I'm not getting this. And, I mean, we didn't have planning periods. That was just something we would do after school, or we were focused on kids. And I don't think teachers today, individual teachers are focused on kids. But the perception is that teachers complain about what they don't have. They don't have supplies. They don't have planning period. They don't have assistance to do that. They don't, you know, when I look and the people my age look and say, look, we had to teach music and art and PE and recess and bus, and we didn't go to the bathroom. Yeah. Well, we did, but I would say teachers need to quit complaining today.
All right. I think we'll wrap that up. Thank you.
A little touchy there.
All right. No, that's good. Well, I don't know.